Today on the Nerd Outcast podcast, we talk about Robotech. Discussing the hit 80s anime Robotech slash Macross slash so many other things. As is typical for this podcast, I brought on a group of experts who feel they can speak with some authority about this given topic. My first expert has been on before, and his name is...
Matt Young.
Hi, Matt.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
Yay.
Hooray.
Great to have you. Well, I'll see you next week.
Yep. So long.
So, Matt, in case someone's listening to you for the first time, yeah. What type of nerd are you? And maybe specifically, television or anime?
I'm not a huge anime guy, honestly.
Okay.
Robotech was on when I was a child, so it got swept in with, at that time, with He-Man and Masters of the Universe, and like, it. But it stood out as being unique in my mind. As an adult, I'm more of a, I tend to be like a big superhero, DC Comics, Batman, Doctor Who, Star Trek nerd, and I'll dabble in anime if I hear something really good about something, like, I really want to watch Death Note, which is an older thing, but somebody said it's really great, and like, sometimes other anime stuff that I've watched for sure that I've really loved was like The Big O.
Oh, yeah.
oh gosh, what was the other thing that was on all the... Oh, Cowboy Bebop.
Well, oh, of course.
Big one.
Oh, yeah.
That, like, just, it's so good. It sort of transcends the genre in a lot of ways.
Surprise random question.
Yeah.
Who is your favorite doctor?
Oh.
The 10th Doctor. David Tennant, for sure.
All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough. None of us will judge your answer, so...
Well, not you. No. Anyway.
I mean,
not out loud.
Yeah. although I'm super enjoying Capaldi, and I'm really curious to see where he goes.
All right, like cool. Like
yeah.
Well, this isn't a Doctor Who discussion.
Oh, yeah. But tabled.
All right, well, we'll jump back to you in a minute in Robotech. My next expert has also been on before, and his name is...
Patrick Sweetman.
Welcome back, Pat.
Thanks, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
Aww.
So, same questions to you. What type of nerd are you, and maybe specifically television or anime?
Can I interrupt for a second and say, did you say it's always a pleasure to be here?
Oh, it's always a pleasure to be here.
He's just announcing it's a pleasure to always be at his podcast.
Is it not a pleasure?
I was going to say something about that, too, and I'm like, I'm not always, you know, pleased to be in your presence, but...
Chris has a very high opinion of himself and his podcast.
My 178 listeners.
No, okay.
Wait, I didn't bring my own beer. What the... This isn't even catered.
I'm sorry. Now, back on track.
I'm calling you. Union rep.
As far as, you know, what kind of nerd... role-playing games, comics, cartoons, that kind of stuff. I'm not as much into video games. I have definitely played stuff. Anime, not as much, but I am more into this. Much like Matt said, this was one of our childhood shows where this was the same time He-Man, G.I. Joe, Transformers. This was one of those after-school shows, 3:30 in the afternoon or whatever. You get home from school and watch it. And one of the great things about this, and we'll get into it, is this amazing story arc that, I mean, it transcends 40 years, really, worth of time and three generations of fighting.
Cool. My next expert has also been on before, and his name is...
Steven Scalabrino.
Welcome back, Steven.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm very pleased to be here, actually.
You're pleased?
Without you saying that, I am actually pleased to be here.
It is a pleasure. To have you on my podcast.
You're pleased to have me?
It's a genuine pleasure.
He's pleased to have Steven. But it's a pleasure for us to be here.
It's a pleasure. Steven.
Yes.
You just became my favorite.
like
sir, similar questions to you. What are some of your favorite nerdy shows, and what animes do you really enjoy?
Okay, favorite nerdy shows, obviously Doctor Who, you know, I'm actually liking the Star Wars Rebels series. I think it's kind of a fun little adventure into the Star Wars series.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm excited.
Do you like it? Do you like it better than Clone Wars?
No, God, no.
Okay.
I wish Clone Wars is still here. I mean, it's very Disney-fied in its writing, but we don't need to go in that direction. Anyway, other nerdy things. like Black Sails. That show on Stars, which is pretty cool. I like Pirates. Pirates are cool. Battlestar Galactica.
Pirates versus Ninjas.
Have you played the new Assassin's Creed then?
Oh yeah, all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The pirate one was really good.
It's fantastic.
I haven't played it yet, but I'm excited.
Yeah, it's very awesome. Yeah. I mean, just the ship battles alone.
Yeah.
Take hours doing that.
What other animes are you familiar with or do you really enjoy?
Man, I was huge into anime when I was a kid. Like, that was my thing. Anime. So I did everything from Trigun, which was probably number one is Trigun.
Okay.
Close second would be Cowboy Bebop. Then after that, obviously Robotech was one of mine. Man, I went into so many things. What was that one where that guy, every time he got hit by water, he turned into a girl?
Oh, is that
Ranma?
No, Ranma.
Ranma
one
and
a half.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
It's yeah.
It was so weird and kind of sexy, but cool. All
right.
It was good. I like that one.
Oh, Japan.
Yeah, they had some weird shit.
With their tentacles.
Yeah, the tentacle sack. The hentai, of course.
Yep.
Man, I can't even. Guts and the Berserk saga.
Okay.
He's about a barbarian and kind of medieval, and he's got like a demon. It's really cool.
Surprise question to you.
Read the manga first.
Surprise question to you.
Yeah.
Do you prefer to watch anime dubbed, or do you want subtitles? Do you prefer to watch it in original Japanese?
Well, I prefer to watch it in dubbed, if it's good dubbed.
Okay.
If it's not, then I'll watch it in Japanese.
All right.
I'm not very much a truist. I'm kind of lazy. I don't want to read, necessarily.
Yeah.
I feel like even in the subtitles, you lose a lot of the context. So.
Okay.
But like shows like Cowboy Bebop, the dubbing is spot on.
It's excellent.
It's
yeah.
So good. So, I mean, you have to watch it in that format, I feel.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's bring it back to Robotech. Listeners, I will be serving as outcast, for I have actually never seen Robotech. I guess I should explain how I came across the Macross saga. I came across Macross through role-playing. We talked a little bit about this off mic, that there's a role-playing game of this.
Yep.
I don't know if the version I was playing was a licensed version.
It was.
Or
it was from Palladium, same company did Rift, same structure and system.
I think they started publishing it again a few years ago, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Well, whatever we were playing, we got all of our rules offline. There were, like, no printed books.
Yeah, there actually was a printed book. I had most of them.
Yeah.
That's what makes me think we were not using that system.
No.
Like, we were using, like, some jury-rigged...
Did you use a lot of D20s?
No. We used D6s.
Okay, then it wasn't
okay.
The official one.
Well, anyway, we went on adventures against the Invid and, you know, all of these Veritech fighters and YF-21 and 19 and all these strange things that I learned about, the Zentradi. I had never watched the show, and my friend showed me Macross Plus, which is kind of a standalone film that takes place later in the Macross universe, which I really loved. And is pretty disconnected from the main series, but it's one of my favorite animes, actually. I think it's just a really good film. And that is the extent of my knowledge. I didn't really get a lot into Robotech. I was watching a lot of Voltron as a kid, and then later on, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Thundercats, all of that. So, my first two questions that I want to pose to everybody. Did you watch this in 85, when it first came out, and did you know that it was anime? Did you know that it was something a little different from a different country, per se? Or was that really not in the zeitgeist at the time?
Yeah, I was watching in 85, but I think, you know, sort of like Matt and I mentioned, at the time it wasn't... We didn't know what anime was. It was another, you know, weekday afternoon cartoon after school. But we knew there was something a little different. It wasn't the same as Transformers and, you know, G.I. Joe, He-Man, you know, a bunch of other stuff that was on at the same time. You could tell there was a difference. But yeah, we had no idea until later. At least I didn't know what anime was.
Yeah, I definitely wasn't aware at the time. I think I was aware, certainly, when shows had a distinct look,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's part of what drew me to it. Also, before this, I was super into Battle of the Planets,
yes.
which is originally Science Ninja Team Gatchaman.
Okay.
which is a great one. You've got to watch
If you watch the Science Ninja Team Gatchaman, that's one that's never been dubbed well, because all the translations are garbage.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
And the original Japanese with subtitles is fucking great. Really badass and, like, much starker. Like, very little music, very little dialogue. It's really cool.
Okay.
And so, like, things that, like, stood out and, like, had their own kind of, like, feel, I feel like even as a kid, maybe I'm building myself up here. It's like, even He-Man, I was aware of as a kid, was like so repetitive. You could tell that they were like constantly
get mad, throw a boulder, get mad.
Like, yeah, it's like,
right.
Recycling footage.
Yeah, recycling footage. It just you were really aware of it.
But even like Robotech did that. But you know, your other shows, your He-Man, G.I. Joe, Transformers, it was a series of standalone episodes where things like Robotech, Battle of the Planets. Mm. You know, even Voltron was more an anime than the others were, that it was an evolving storyline that continued a progression, an overarching story, which you didn't see very often in the cartoons that were trying to sell you Hasbro toys.
And being like 11, 12, like I'm just prepubescent, so like I really got sucked into the whole love triangle aspect of the show.
Oh, yeah.
Like I was as much into the love triangle of the show as I was like, right. Veritech fighters are fucking awesome.
Right, right. Were you singing all the songs too?
Right. Was. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The one song. The one song.
Steven, were you? What was my question? It was.
When did you watch?
I watched in 85.
And did you know it was?
Did not actually watch in 85. I have kind of a similar track record like you have. My first role playing game I've ever played was a Robotech role playing game, official one.
Yeah.
And with a group of my friends as a kid, we had our own squadron of Veritechs that we had like formed, which was kind of cool. So we'd meet every week. Yeah, it was that part I really liked, because I was like kind of exploring the world through the role playing game at the time, you know, and just discovering what these Veritechs are. And you know, we had this, like I said, ours was called the Jester Squadron.
Nice.
It was our, you know, squad name. It was pretty sweet. We had this like logo on our ships and everything. We were really nerdy. Moving on. So it was a great time playing a role-playing game, and the more I played it, I realized there was actually a series. I didn't even know, and then my friends were like, you know, it's a cartoon series. You can watch it. It's on Sci-Fi Channel at like 6 a.m. in the morning.
Right.
Remember that? It was like Sci-Fi Quest or something.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah, they had like Ewoks and droids was on there too, and then it was like Robotech. And so I would tape episodes, and then I'd watch them, you know, and we still play the role-playing game, and that's how I watched it. And so it had to have been, you know, 90s by that point when I got around to it. But then, once I started watching on Sci-Fi, I started getting the DVDs, I started catching up, and just anywhere I could find Macross or Robotech or anything, I wanted it. It was cool for me.
I don't think I was not introduced to the word anime until my brother. And I remember, like, maybe 91, 92, he was watching something called The Guyver.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, this is an anime. Double I was blades. Like, what is that? And, yeah. And like, I didn't really watch it. I was a little too young. You know, it looked like, I was like, oh, anime must mean adult cartoons.
Yeah.
Well, like, just like a more mature kind of seriousness.
And by that point, we were getting things like Akira and Ghost in the Shell was coming out around that time. And so they were showing up like Blockbuster on VHS at the time. And so that's where we were getting more into those. So I think, at least for me, anime, especially in the early 90s, meant more of the movie format. It wasn't, I wasn't applying it so much to the series.
And there was a short period. We're much like, are we going to go HD DVD or Blu-ray? Is it going to be anime or Japanimation?
Oh, like what are we going to call it?
Yeah. And Japanimation did not stick it out for its slightly racist sounding name.
Just a little bit.
But I got it. It was like, it's Japanimation, but that's not how anybody said it.
After figuring out what anime was, in hindsight, I was like, oh, yeah, Voltron, totally anime, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Thundercats is really interesting to me, because it's not anime, but it was produced by East Animation Corporation, so it looks like it.
And it's got the overall storyline, so it's got elements that animes do have.
Well, and if you even look at, like, a series like Transformers, where they would, a lot of times it would be written here, and then they'd farm it out to different studios. So, like, the quality of the animation from episode to episode is wildly different. Yeah. Like, sometimes it's really bad, and sometimes you're like, oh, that looks like it could be anime, you know? Like, they really add a lot of detail and make it look awesome.
Well, I mean, even Thundercats originally was a, like, overseas show.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why they're cat people, for crying out loud. Come on, you know?
Seriously. They were cats?
Yeah, it was like, I believe it was piloted. It was a pilot in Japan and never picked up, but it was tried here, and then it got picked up here, so they continued it here.
That's why they're naked in the first episode.
Yes.
See, a lot of things are making sense now. Right?
Yeah.
To bring it back to Robotech, something I learned while doing a little research for this, much like Voltron, what we know as Robotech is actually a combination of three unrelated Japanese shows, which I did not know. For the longest time, I thought Robotech was Macross. That is not entirely true. Our Robotech is actually the Super Dimension Fortress Macross, Super Dimension Cavalry Southern Cross, and then Genesis Climber Must Be Dead. These are three animes in Japan, all of which are not related. They all have similar themes. They're all
super
about giants.
There was a Super Dimension, like, block, I guess, at some point.
Okay.
That Cavalry and Macross were part of. But and they're
different storylines.
They were totally separate storylines, not intended to be, like, related characters at all.
Okay. So, what my question is, for the implications of Robotech, because it seems like a real hassle to completely re-edit three shows together rather than just dump it solely
so they could get it into...
For an American market, to do an afternoon cartoon, you needed a minimum of 65 episodes for your season.
And Macross was only like 40 or 45
exactly.
or something.
So, and not everything is just re-edited. They did do brand new animation. And this is one thing where I think it's important to make a distinction. Robotech is specific to the U.S. released 85 version, 3 saga episode, because it really diverges entirely from the Super Dimensional Fortress Macross is probably the closest to the storyline that became Robotech, where they stole the footage and a lot of the ideas from the other things. It's totally its own separate American version that does not exist in Japan. Well, didn't until we made it. So,
does it, since it's pulling from three shows, is there a lot of inconsistencies? And like what I noticed is like each season is almost based on a show. Like the first season is
well,
the Macross
that's
saga.
Like, it's not a season. It's one entire run that was released at once. It's three separate sagas that comprise the overall. And it is does at times feel disjointed. The Macross saga, which is the first 65 or 35 episodes, feels very different from the Southern Cross section to the
Invid
section or New Generation, whatever they want to call it. But they do find ways to tie it together for this overall storyline. But yeah, just the entire feel of each show is very different.
Do characters, because of that, do characters just completely disappear?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
But the way they fix that and get around it is it's generational.
Yes.
So, like, each section sort of becomes the next generation. One of the main characters in the middle part, which is originally... Super Dimension Cavalry Southern Cross.
She's a daughter.
She's the daughter of Max and Miria in the first...
In the Macross saga.
Two main characters in the first series.
Because they actually do have a baby in Macross.
Yep.
But then like, oh, well, that baby grows up to be this person. And then in the third one, they talk a lot about Admiral Hunter coming back, waiting for Admiral Hunter to show up, which is Rick Hunter from the first, from Macross again.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of a funny story. When I was a kid watching this, it was getting on the St. Louis station, KPLR, and I was into, like, I don't know exactly where it cut off. There were maybe, like, 5 or 6 episodes left in the New Generation, the last section of it. And we stopped getting KPLR. like it literally cut off in the middle of an episode. It, like, shut off. And I was like, I'm never going to see the end of it! Which is kind of why I got obsessed with it. And when the internet came around, I started looking for it again because I had never seen the end.
Mm-hmm.
But they and as a kid thinking, well, I want to see Rick Hunter come back, and figuring he's going to be in the last episode, and he's not at all because he doesn't exist in that series.
Yeah,
weird.
Although they think they talk about him showing up.
There's a few things that happen with it, but just to touch on another point, a lot of characters died in this series.
Yeah,
this wasn't like things like G.I. Joe and stuff where nobody died. I mean, you think G.I. Joe and Transformers, nobody died until they did like a movie version. Everybody always lived. They survived. This one, there were high casualties on both sides. In the Macross saga, the Earth gets decimated. They estimate 95% of the human population is dead.
Yeah.
It is the people who survived the battle in space and that 5% on Earth are the ones that are trying to rebuild, and that's what sparks the Southern Cross. We get decimated again in the Robotech Masters attack, and then the remaining ones survive until the Invid arrive. They decimate them and turn what's left into slaves, and then it's the Robotech Expeditionary Force coming back to try to save the day.
Mm-hmm.
Good God.
Yeah.
No, it's very complicated.
I remember there's yeah. And as a kid watching it, and in 85, being young enough to be like affected by it, I guess, more than I might be now. Like, there are a couple things, like, there are a couple characters that die in Macross, and when the Zentradi get to Earth and decimate the Earth, you know, you're just so in that mode of like, oh, He-Man shows up and saves the day and everything's fine. And they, like, blow up the fucking Earth. Like, there's a scene where a soldier, like, grabs a girl and, like, tries to shelter her as, like, white, blinding white light just, like,
it's like nuked and
kills
obliterate.
Them all. And you I remember being like, what has happened? I, like, it got me. And, like, but that was also what drew me into it, was, like, there are real stakes here. Not everything's perfect, but people are still surviving, and, like, it just felt so much more sophisticated than anything else that was on at the time.
Just a quick aside, you mentioned Zentradi, just for the listeners.
No,
so
sorry,
in the Macross saga, the Zentradi are the bad guys. They are between 40 and 60 feet tall. Aliens from space have come to Earth trying to track down this super-dimensional fortress, SDF-1, that is now in the hands of the humans that crash-landed here in 1999. You may remember that from the news.
I remember it from the role-playing.
Right. So the Zentradi are the bad guys, and they're the ones that do decimate the Earth, as you were saying. But then getting back to your point about people dying, there are some major characters that die, and a couple of them, when they die, it's sad. It really is, because these are characters you've come to know and really love, and they die, and it's especially when you're young. I was just rewatching a couple of them today. It's still sad to watch. You know, it's like major characters. I don't want to give too many spoilers and mention names, but
Well, I mean, it's interesting how these events happen where people are dying and, entire planets are getting wiped out, but they're still trying to spin it in a way that it could be, dumbed down for kids a little bit. Yeah. Like, in the first episode, or the second episode, where Rick basically sees the death of one of the Zentradi, and, like, the man is dying, or the alien's dying, and, crawling towards him, and just his carcass falls on him. You can see, the bullet wounds and the blood coming out. You can kind of tell, now when you look back on it, that they cut away at a point where he actually got shot, so you don't actually see him getting shot.
Well, Robotech cut away at a moment.
Of course, of course. But in the original.
It's not a lot bloodier in the original versions, but there are definitely some things that they edited out for television.
Yeah.
One of the major deaths, one of the main characters that dies... it's still a great episode in the American Robotech version,
but you don't see the blood where you saw in the original.
Yeah, but there, I think it's a little more impactful and a little bit better in the original.
I know Dragon Ball Z, early Dragon Ball Z, and Voltron are really heavily edited. Is Robotech? Is it blatantly obvious when they're editing? Do you wish it was do you wish you could see the unedited American version of that existed?
That was my point. I kind of wished that at that time they would have allowed kids the choice. This is an intense series. You can handle this. Kids can handle stuff like that, subject matter like that.
I think the choice.
That's my
the guy who is mostly responsible for bringing it to America is this guy named Carl Masick, and I think he, to the best of his ability, tried to very judiciously edit. Mm-hmm. I mean, they could have hacked it up the way they hacked up Battle of the Planets and added a dumb talking robot underwater that's like, boop, 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 that was like R2-D2 that had nothing to do with the original show, and they didn't do that. As much as possible, they tried to make edits, A, to make all the stories go together, and then when there was something that was like, they know this is not going to get past the censors because it's too bloody, it's too graphic, they would cut that out and cut away from it. But for the most part, I actually think it's a pretty good representation of the storyline from the originals overall. I mean, there are things like in Southern Cross, in the Robotech Masters, the original Southern Cross, it's on another planet. There are like two moons in the sky, and they had to go through and wipe out the two moons in the sky in every shot that was in. So there are like other things that are just purely story-wise. Obviously, they had to change that because it's like, why the fuck are there two moons in the sky?
They had to make it like Earth. That's what they were
saying. Yeah, it was supposed to be Earth after.
Yeah, it's around 2020 or so.
Okay.
Cross takes place.
For a timeline, 1999 is when the spaceship crashed on Earth.
Right.
And then it was 10 years after that.
So 2009 is when the Zentradi attacked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were all afraid of Y2K and the Zentradi.
I remember when 1999 came along, my huge anime nerd friend was like, hey, happy Macross Day. It didn't crash. I'm sorry. I don't know what you're talking about.
I wish it did, though. But.
Yeah, no. Kind of weird that it's SDF-1, which kind of implies there's a second one.
There was.
Oh, there was.
Very briefly.
All right. Well, hold on to that. So let's talk about, now that we've kind of...
There's SDF-3 as well.
Now that we've established where the show came from, let's talk about the specifics of Robotech. From the way you guys are describing it, it sounds like a war story.
Yes.
With a love triangle. I am familiar. I know the main character is Rick Hunter.
Yes.
That's the main character of the first generation.
He's a primary hero.
He's a
pilot. He's a Luke Skywalker fighter pilot kid.
He's our kid. When we first see him in the very beginning, he's a stunt flyer for like circus flying.
Right.
Who happens to come to this specific island of Macross, which is where they get the name, where this superdimensional fortress has landed. You need to see his big brother Roy, who's a military pilot, and this Robotech. And then the Zentradi attack, and he gets wrapped up into it and becomes an unwitting participant and chooses to join the military and become a Veritech fighter pilot.
And now, he and Roy are not actually related.
They're half-brothers or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Or adopted brothers.
They were half-brothers.
But he always refers to him as big brother.
Yeah, he always calls him big brother.
And they were also in the flying circus
together.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, they not flying, like, trapeze, but, like, so,
ships. Yeah, maybe not actual brothers, but lived together for a while.
Right.
Kind of brother.
Like, Rick's father acted as a father to Roy or something like that.
Right. Okay. They didn't really go into it, but...
Yeah.
What other characters should I be aware of in that first generation?
Lin-Min-May.
Yes, Min-May.
Yes. Man, can she sing.
Woo!
She is a... So, again, in research for this, she is actually, or was actually, a pop star. Like, the actress who sang her voice in the show.
The
like
Japanese version.
In the Japanese version, they actually were like, let's make this person the singer.
And the songs are actually... much better in the original version.
In the Japanese version.
Yeah, the one thing that kind of like skimped on in the Robotech version was
decent
like
songs.
Decent songs. Geez. And they also, I think they recycled songs more often. Yeah. I think she only has like two or three songs.
Yeah, To Be in Love is through everything.
Yeah.
The Starlight song.
Yeah.
But yeah, the original Japanese actress was an actual, I don't recall her name.
Yeah, so Min-May, when we first meet her, when Rick first meets her in the beginning, she's only like 16 years old, which is just, I think Rick was only like 17 or 18.
About the same age, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, it's they have this attraction, kind of like childhood love.
And kind of the same deal, she gets wrapped up.
She gets wrapped up in this as well.
With Rick at the same time.
Because people on the island, when the Zentradi attack, they end up, and it's through a course of events, get pulled in, you know, and incorporated into the ship. So you end up with a city of civilians inside the ship for the rest of the series.
It kind of reminds me a lot of, like, the new Battlestar.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
SDF-1 is very much like a Battlestar Galactica. Because they don't really know how to use a lot of the stuff on there. It's all brand new technology and alien technology, too.
Yeah, they've been trying to, like, essentially take the ship that crashed and backwards
engineer it
to, like, figure out how to make stuff. And they've used enough of it to make the Veritech fighters. Mm-hmm. But there are still whole sections of this ship that's created by giant people, and that's a super secret that like most of the public does not realize these people are giants.
The Zentradi.
But the SDF-1 was actually created by Zor. It was Zor's ship. It was a Robotech master.
You're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And did you read that little byline? They were trying to loop the series and make a prequel series where Min-May like goes back in time and becomes the mother to Zor.
What?
I know. And it would have like ended right before the first episode of Robotech.
So let me see if I can remember. The SDF-1 just pops up in the middle of the ocean on near an island or
Crash lands from space.
Crash
lands,
And then 10 years later, the Zentradi come hunting for it.
Yes.
I don't know if I should ask how the Zentradi lost it or if that's like a plot point I'll figure out if I watch the show.
You're not going to get much of it. You have to get in more into the books and stuff. Yeah. So the ship was created by this character named Zor, who you find out a little more in the second group, the Southern Cross, who was one of the Robotech Masters. He was trying to escape the Robotech Masters. The Zentradi are basically the military force of the Robotech Masters' control. They send the Zentradi after the ship. Zor has been hopping around making these space folds all over the place to elude capture.
Is Zor Zentradi? I'm sorry.
Zor is a Robotech Master, which is similar to human. He's human size.
Okay.
similar physiology, but not 100%.
They're like the brains, basically.
Yeah, they can actually
fight.
It create stuff. The Zentradi are pretty much straight fighters. They cannot repair or create stuff. They're not very good at that. They learn later, but they're not initially good at even minor repairs. They pretty much are just good at tactics and good at fighting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Zor's ship, Zor ends up dying at some point in the past before the ship ever appears in our solar system. In the last fold, it had been programmed. It lands here and crash lands. And
okay.
That's when we discover it, start backwards engineering the equipment, the everything that's in there.
Well, after
we know nothing about the Zentradi. And all of a sudden in 2009, they show up and there's a booby trap set up in the SDF-1 where it shoots the main cannon and kind of like sparks this war that when the Zentradi attack, because otherwise they would have just come and tried to take the ship, probably.
Which is, again, a really kind of cool animation to see as a kid.
The reflex cannon destroys pretty much everything in its path.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It shoots from, like, planet side, right? And it shoots straight.
Across the horizon.
Across the horizon. So it shoots out into space and destroys, like, half the fleet of the Zentradi they're attacking.
Right after the ship.
And you can see the ships, like, getting ripped apart.
Yeah.
Like, as a kid, I was like, wow.
So
cool.
Is Earth completely just not prepared for this invasion?
No.
Like,
no.
Does Earth get its ass kicked?
I mean,
okay.
They know that they need to be getting prepared for something, because there's something out there.
But it's more of a military secret. It's not wide known going on. So, to avoid this, the SDF-1 ends up in deep space, and fortunately doesn't try to go to fight there, so Earth's safe for a little while.
Okay. Anyone else? We mentioned Min-May. You said love triangle. Is there a third?
Yeah.
Lisa Hayes.
Lisa.
I mean,
she
to
was
me.
Sassy.
I mean,
what just happened to the room?
Even,
like, all three of you are like,
even as a child. Even as a child.
She was the real woman there.
Yeah. Even as a child, you're like, oh, Min-May's cute.
She's
fun.
A child.
But Lisa. Oh, Lisa Hayes.
Yeah.
How could you not be in love with Lisa Hayes?
See, you'd have fun with Min-May, but you'd marry Lisa.
That's right.
Who's Lisa Hayes? Is she a pilot? Is she a...
She was one of the girls in the command deck, because it was Captain Glovel, who was the captain of the SDF-1.
Yeah, and Claudia Grant.
Is she actually the second in command, I believe?
Claudia had similar roles, but she commanded more like flight ops.
Yeah, okay.
So
basically
she's more like
the ship. Yeah.
Well, yeah, she commanded the Veritech wings and stuff. And,
right.
Yeah.
So she's sort of like the person who's talking to all the pilots.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess Claudia's probably more operations on the ship,
yeah.
It felt like.
Yeah.
And they didn't get super detailed into
that
stuff. But definitely Lisa's talking to Rick while he's flying his plane.
Wink, wink.
That
didn't come to much later. They hated each other initially.
Oh, yeah. of course.
Yeah.
And
then there's Max. You want to talk about Max Sterling?
Yeah, Max Sterling.
The latest Veritech pilot ever.
He's
blue hair. Which made
glasses.
No sense to the kid. I'm like, why is his hair blue?
He was the greatest pilot of his generation, even greater than Rick.
And Rick was no slouch.
And Roy
Focker. We already talked about Roy a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a little bit older than all these guys, and he was already the head of a squadron.
Yep.
And with the time all these events kind of took off, and he was sort of at the head of the robotechnology.
Yeah.
I don't know what you call it, like, I guess test flights.
Okay.
Like, he was one of the first guys to take these essentially
jet
fighters
that
turn into robots out. He was integral.
Oh, by the way, the planes turn into robots. That's also an important part.
That's
a cool part.
Yeah.
Yes. Are they just called Veritech fighters? Because I know in Macross Plus, they actually have, like, the 19, the 21,
there,
the 11.
There are other
generations.
Like,
they're
mechs, which
are
similar to the same ones they used in, was it Battletech? Was that the name of that game?
Yes,
and stuff?
Yes, Battletech.
And Macross has them. They're not Veritechs, they're Valkyries.
Ah.
And they're VF, there's VF-1As, VF-1Js, and VF-1Ss, Valkyrie fighter, and it's like...
They're different by heads.
Yeah, the heads kind of indicate rank more than anything else. Yeah. They don't function majorly different than that. The 1A has like a single like cannon on top of the head. The 1J has like two cannons on either side, and then the 1S the 1J has one cannon on either side, and then the 1S has two cannons on either side.
That's Roy's.
So yeah.
Through the Macross saga, it is pretty much, you know, aside from the mechs that don't fly, it is pretty much just Veritech fighters.
Mm-hmm.
Later in Southern Cross, they have different planes, but they get into hover tanks then. And then the third segment, there's a new version of the Veritex, but you have your alphas and betas, and even yourself.
It looks very similar to the Veritech, which is... Yeah. I was curious about that, because it looks very similar to the original Veritech.
Well, it's an updated design of the Veritech, but, you know, the Japanese, they were still doing, like, these, you know, Battleoid Transformer things, so I think everything kind
of
looked a
copy
little similar.
A copy,
yeah. So sure. Let's get a little more details out on the table. So that's the... That's the Macross Saga.
Yep.
Then you have the Robotech Masters show up.
Yeah, they call it like Robotech Masters or Southern Cross, and wasn't there was another word that, or title they used for it at some point?
For
but
what? Southern Cross.
Southern Cross.
For the,
I always refer to Southern Cross.
Yeah. So
Southern Cross. Yeah.
So yeah, that takes place what 10, 20 years after the end of the events of Macross.
Yeah, because Dana's like just. Well, she's probably like 18 or something.
Yeah, so, she's
18
young,
years later.
I don't even think she was old.
So one character does carry over.
Yeah, and I don't want to give away too much, but Survivors of the First War, they explain kind of what's happened and why they're not there. So Dana, the Robotech Masters have come to Earth, and Dana and her kind of generation are the ones left behind to fight them. The Robotech Masters are coming in search of something called protoculture.
Yes, that's protoculture. I do remember that in a role-playing game. Protoculture.
It's effectively the power source that powers all these fancy machines.
Vanadium crystals, whatever you want to call them.
Exactly. It's their power source that, you know, makes all of these fantastic things possible. Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Somehow we have it here on Earth for some reason.
The Robotech Masters are basically out of it because the guy Zor I mentioned before was the one who created it and ran off with the recipe and said, no, you're using it for evil, I'm out of here. Which is why they initially were trying to find them in the first place. Now they've realized, hey, we think it's the SDF was on Earth, let's go there because, you know, might be there.
So if the Robotech Masters are the brains of kind of everything,
mm-hmm.
How are they, like, is Entradi still around in the second season or
no.
war, or like who
well, because of the nature of like putting the different series together to make a singles American series, nothing that specific overlaps. Like, they decide a character in the second series is the child of this other character, and then the villains are always completely different.
And I mean, they do explain it again. You know,
Robotech did
do a good job with this overall story arc. That, you know, well, one, most Zentradi were killed during the end of the Macross Saga, and the ones that are still around are not on Earth, and they're tied in with what happens with the rest of the original characters, Raconte, Lisa Hayes, and such.
And some of them, well, aren't some of them?
Some are micronized.
Some are micronized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is there is a process.
I didn't know if that was a spoiler enough or
not.
I know from Macross.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there is a process, a technology the Zentradi have to micronize themselves down to human size. So from 40 feet down to, you know, five and a half, six foot, whatever.
Okay.
Human size.
Any other characters or specific details about this middle part with the Robotech Masters?
It's actually the part I remember the least well.
Yeah. I feel it wasn't shown as much.
Is it shorter? Is it a?
It's about 10 episodes shorter than Macross was. The thing, I don't think it plays as well, even rewatching it now. But it's got some important stuff. As far as background, this whole like the Zor stuff, the Flower of Light protoculture thing. This thing called Flower of Life is where they developed protoculture from.
Yeah.
And it gives you some background on the Zentradi and some foreshadowing on the Invid, which are going to come in the last segment. But it just, as a standalone, it's my least favorite of the three segments. It just does, for me, doesn't play as well. But again, it's in one of those, it's not bad, it feels disjointed at times and not as fluid.
And it definitely doesn't kind of hit the same notes in terms of like the great love triangle from the first section.
Mm-hmm.
There's some character stuff that's fine, but not quite as compelling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
and
Dana herself, you don't really
she's kind of bratty.
Yeah.
She's a little bratty. And then, actually, I also think that the mecha themselves aren't quite as cool.
The hover tanks.
The hover tanks are neat, but, like, the rest of the stuff is kind of meh.
If it weren't for the role-playing game, I'd hate the hover tanks, but in the role-playing game, they were awesome.
Oh, they're badass. I'm sure. I mean, I think they're kind of awesome in the show.
Yeah.
And I'm disappointed they've never made a cool toy of the hover tank.
Well, they do, but it sucks.
Right?
Yeah, like they made, was it Tonka? I think had the rights.
Yeah.
Tonka had the rights to all the toys back in the day. No, Matchbox.
Matchbox.
Sorry, Matchbox had the rights to all the toys. and they made a hover tank, but it was like made of metal and it like broke. Like, yeah. Everything that exists, all that exists now, are like either broken or in pieces. Like it's just a horrible toy.
Yeah, and I to deviate here for just a moment. In the early 2000s, when I started sort of discovering Robotech again, and I'd never seen the end of it, and I was like, fuck, I want to see the end of that show. DVDs started coming out, and I started just, like, Googling it. You know, internet was newish. And I realized there were all these toys they were making in Japan for Macross.
Hmm.
And I started, like, getting imported toys. I bought like a bunch of the Baratech fighters, and those things were expensive.
From Japan?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I've imported from Japan. So
it's not cheap.
It's not cheap.
I ended up selling a bunch of them. I still have a VF1S, the black and yellow skull.
The Roy one.
The Roy one.
Yeah, Skull Leader.
Yeah, Skull Leader. And I've seen they've made, you know, Robotech.com ended up making some Alpha and Beta fighters. They made Cyclones, which we haven't gotten into yet.
Those
are my favorite. Yeah.
Cycles are so cool.
They're so cool. But
kids and motorcycles, come on.
But even with all the like nostalgia of toys that have been made in the last 15 years, and because of the internet, they've never made any Southern Calvary stuff. Mm-hmm. Not a single thing has been updated or made. So I think it was even less popular in Japan.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then really quick to finish it out, then we get to the Invid invasion.
Yeah, my favorite.
Or
new generation.
Who are the Invid? Because this is who I fought in my role-playing games so all the freaking time.
They were this alien race that basically Zora, the guy who discovered protoculture, he's basically stole this flower of life from them. He's the one that cultivated it. Apparently, you find out in different ways, the Robotech Masters and the Invid have been fighting each other for however long, often, you know, distant galaxies. Mm-hmm. The Invid are looking for the Flower of Life because, you know, all this stuff was stolen, and they are basically tracking it for the same reason the Robotech Masters were. They need it for, you know, to help their progression. And they, you know, find it that it's on Earth. And they show up 10 years or whatever after the end of the Southern Cross saga. And Earth is not entirely ready for their invasion, and they come in, they take over, and they're an occupying force, turning humans into effectively slave labor to help harvest this protoculture and the flower of life for their purposes.
You said about 10 years later, so it's like 2020?
I'm trying to remember. It might be closer to 2040. I think it's 2043 is when...
Okay. That sounds right to me.
Well, no, 2043 this way, because I was just rewatching. That's when Scott Bernard's force comes back. So the Invid have already been here for a little while.
There's a couple of small... Not colonies, but like military bases on other planets. There was a Mars base, and there was a Saturn base, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
So the Mars base at one point decides, this is sort of where Next Generation starts, is Mars base is like, we're going to go kick their ass, and get the Invid out of there, and get Earth back. And they show up and they try to attack, and it all goes wrong. And it ends up that a few survivors, like crash land, you follow this main character, Scott Bernard, as he sort of like tries to find resistance. He was part of the force from Mars that was going to attack and take it back.
Yeah,
and then he's looking for resistance fighters to help him.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a little misleading. They were originally from Mars base, but they'd actually been off with the Robotech Expeditionary
Force. Oh, yes, you're right.
But they did come back, yeah. And so their standing mission orders were like, any survivors, try to find this reflex point main spot. Do whatever you can to destroy it, because that's, you know, kind of the home base of the Invid on Earth.
Is what they say.
Yeah.
By a decade. Okay. This is where I get confused sometimes, because Robotech, yes, they're part of the Robotech Expedition Force with Admiral Hunter, but I think in Mospita,
it's a little different.
They're just coming,
from Mars. Yeah.
And on the planes, it says Mars base on all of them. So.
And Scott was born on Mars.
And it all gets jumbled together in my brain.
any other big characters or links or any other characters that that come into that third campaign?
So you have the new character. Scott is the main one, but
Rand.
I forget.
Brown hair. There's a little girl. Annie.
Was a little Lunk bit. Or Lunk or whatever.
Lunk and Rook Bartley. Yeah.
Rook Bartley.
Lancer, who also goes as Yellow Dancer or whatever.
Yep. Which is actually one of the best parts of my life.
A transvestite character.
He's a transvestite.
So weird.
Yep.
who's like, they sort of played off a little bit, I think, in that he's like, this is how he disguises himself. He goes town to town and dresses this woman who's kind of famous and sings. But then he's like, he's got the coolest Cyclone, so he's like a resistance fighter when he's a dude. Right. It's, I don't know.
It's cool and weird, but very anime-y.
Very anime. Yeah,
it's a purple Cyclone, right? Is that right? Purple?
I think it was.
His hair was purple. His Cyclone was like blue with like some green highlights.
Okay.
It was like a dark blue, but his is the only one that had... Most of them on the outside of the arm, they had like these cannons.
Yeah.
And his had like these big round things that had blades that came out of
them.
God, I love that thing.
What is a cyclone?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Third series, like I mentioned, they had kind of like Veritech fighters, but kind of got blown up and they're trying to retake Earth. And what survived were these motorcycles that could transform around the rider as kind of like a mechanized armor that was still just a little bit bigger than human size, like about 8 feet tall or so. That were almost like this, you know, emergency thing that popped out of the Veritech. So they were able using these more in that last series because they could move around more easily without being tracked quite so well by the Invid. Because the protoculture that powers everything, the Invid can see that and spot that. So when you fly around the plane, they spot you immediately.
Yeah, and the Cyclones still used protoculture, so they could be tracked, but they were small, they were quick.
They could avoid capture much better.
Yeah, they were. It's very much a resistance force. In the last series.
And it was really well done.
I love that series.
That's why it's my favorite series of the three.
Well, let me. That's what I want to poll. Like which? So which saga series of the three is your favorite?
Number three
is your favorite?
The Invid Invasion, for sure. Because it's this whole ragtag bunch of people, you know, just trying to, you know, get some rebels together to take back Earth. It's very post-apocalyptic feel to it.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot, and the characters are really cool. Like, Ren's kind of a snotty kid, but he's cool. And it's, I don't know, I like the characters a lot more, I feel, in the third one than I do... Even Rick. Like, I never really loved Rick. I was okay with him. But
I mean, you love Roy.
Yeah.
And Rick's like, he's the kind of bland hero.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Pat, what about you? Favorite characters or favorite?
For me, it's always been the first segment. Macross has been my favorite. Mm-hmm. It was the one I saw most as a kid and one I love. I mean, the space battles, the Veritechs versus the pods and stuff. It's just, some great, just epic... fighting and just, you know, Lin-Man May aside, it's still wonderful. Just a little side.
Why is everyone hating on Min-May?
Min-May is like Lindsay Lohan for this universe. It's like the worst part is like you absolutely hate her, but she's integral for why we defeat the Zentradi.
Yeah,
that would make Sharon Apple Miley Cyrus.
I don't want to ruin it.
I will sort of bounce off of that and say that's one of the places. And I think I started to mention this. I think if you get to watch it in the original in Japanese, like Lin-Manmei is much less annoying.
Okay.
like there's just something about the way.
Wasn't it also shorter, so you didn't have as much time to get annoyed by it?
Yeah. They just definitely, like, somehow the way they cast her or portrayed her in the American version, she's just
whiny,
grating. And I think it was honestly maybe because they were trying to be too much like the Japanese version.
Yeah.
So she has this sort of like little girl voice that's da-da-da, and you're like, oh my god, you're so annoying.
It's like nails scraping across a chalkboard.
Yeah. My favorite of the three is probably Macross. I mean, like I said, it just like it hit me at a time when it was like, I don't expect this out of a after school TV show. And then I was hooked, and I wanted to see all the rest of them. That being said, I think the mecha is better in New Generation.
Well, they're more advanced.
Yeah.
Many different
I definitely like the Veritech better.
It's cool that they were able to take those three things and make it seem like, oh yeah, this is the next evolution of this thing that's actually not related. The Veritech fighters are very cool. There's like an alpha and a beta fighter that connect.
But connect independently as well.
Yeah, and then they can both transform into robots. The Cyclones, like Pat said, are like actually like a kind of a they were like in the chest of the alpha fighters.
They carried them, yeah.
Yeah, they were sort of like a...
Yeah.
It was like if
we're escape pod.
That's cool.
All of a sudden, you've got this motorcycle that's also armed.
Because the suit that they would wear while they're flying the Veritech was like half of the Cyclone.
Yeah, snapped into the Cyclone.
Yeah.
Is this all in the role playing game?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk about that. That sounds cool. Any other favorite characters?
Rick was always my main one because I mean I know some people, but you know, he was the hero who, like, you know. And again, I got deep into it. I've read books. I've read comics. Have comics. So I kind of know what the story was supposed to be, although official canon disregards the offshoot, which is called the Sentinels. The survivors of the first Robotech War, and I don't want to get too much into it. It's called the Sentinels. There was kind of this thing that dealt with them. What happened in this?
Well, Sentinels was originally supposed to be the second... series of the TV show.
They did a pilot and it never got picked up beyond that. But they did write books to complete the idea. Because
it was about Rick being the captain of this expedition.
I guess I have to say something, but I don't want to give away too much. So between Macross and Southern Cross, the survivors, they basically go off to try to find the Robotech Masters in their universe as a preemptive strike to prevent them. However, that doesn't happen because simultaneously the Robotech Masters already hit. Yeah, we passed each other
in
the night.
Ships pass in the night. Yeah.
So that's where many of your characters come from, and they go there on the SDF-3. So,
yes. Which was built by Zentradi technology?
Oh, with combination. Combination of, like, stuff we still had left over from the SDF-1 and 2 Zentradi.
Right.
Because
I remember the look of it was very different.
Well, but that was actually a disguising. That was for the Sentinel off to Sentinel, so they thought, so that hopefully they would fool the Robotech Masters into thinking it was a Zentradi ship, so that was just a disguise that they took off later.
Matt, who is your favorite character?
Gosh, there are a lot of good characters, actually. I mean, I would say, like, the whole show skews more towards being a character-driven show than a battle show. The battles are great.
Yeah.
I mean, they're epic when they happen, but there'll be down periods where not much happens other than watching people live their lives and try not to be mad at each other. I would say that I really love Max a lot. Max Sterling and his whole storyline. He's sort of like the secondary plot that goes all through Macross. Because obviously the main thing is that love triangle, but his, like, subplot storylines are really great. There's a Zentradi pilot named Miria.
Miria.
And he have this rivalry that, you know, you just have to watch play out. That's really exciting.
To jump off that, I'm hearing a lot about the heroes. Is there a Mum-Ra? Is there a Cobra Commander? Is there a big bad?
It evolves. Initially, it's Britai, who's the commander of the Zentradi force that comes to Earth.
What's the little...
I was trying to remember, and I was just watching this.
Britai is the main Zentradi.
But he has a second in command who's actually pretty smart.
I like him a lot. I remember him being really fun.
But Britai is very intelligent, and he kind of comes around. I think I mentioned that, like, some Zentradi were working with the humans. Things come around that direction. But the main one is Chiron, who is another Zentradi who ends up coming to help and does not take orders from Britai or anything else. Britai is trying to work in the, you know, based on these overall orders from main Zentradi command and everything. Britai just wants to, even though he's been informed not to destroy the SDF-1 because it's, you know, we need to capture it, he doesn't care. He just wants to destroy it for his own personal glory. So he's like this anarchist running around that just wants to destroy humans and everything else.
And this is something we haven't talked about at all. The Zentradi are actually split in, their ships are split by gender. So male Zentradi never, ever, barely even talk to female Zentradi. Sometimes they talk via communication, but they're never on the same ship together. They are not serving together. They are...
They have no physical contact. They have no sex. They have... Yeah. This is why...
Their culture is purely military.
And it's by using Earth culture and things like music and Minmay kissing men that we're able to defeat them. Because they're not ready for it. This culture shock for us.
Yeah.
Oh, this is this is like... smacking of something else in science fiction or something, that a TV show that the Zentradi sound very similar to something else that I've recently read or watched.
Well, I mean, I think it's sort of a trope a lot through science fiction of, like, the Borg are defeated because we're just so human.
They don't know love.
Is a humanity.
It's very much that type of story.
I mean, you have these smart alien who creates the dumb alien to do its dirty work for him and then sends him out.
And in the third generation, the Invid are very... You don't really get to know them super well.
You do at the end.
You see them at the end.
The Regis you explain more, and she creates her like humanoid children,
right?
That become like kind of the main antagonists in the second half of that.
Right,
but the beginning
right.
is just kind of like it's just nameless Invid that shows up.
Yeah.
From what I remember of the game, the Invid are kind of like a hive. Like they have a
They're tied in mentally. Like the Regis, who is their queen. She like feels and knows what everything is going on with them when they die. I mean, it's kind of like, even though it's almost like cells of her body, is like she might not know exactly details, but she knows something just happened. And, and that one gets kind of interesting as well. But yeah, the Invid are, they start as kind of like slug things, but the Regis has evolved through this flower of life protoculture thing. So she's like this giant humanoid thing that's, you know, all kinds of weird powers. And,
I
think I like the Invid is a better villain.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were just, because of the hive mind technology and, you know, how they would fight, you know, they were more drone-esque.
Yep.
I don't know, I liked them better.
Well, so to jump on that, of the three villains, which is worse? Zentradi? Which is the biggest threat? Zentradi, Robotech, Masters, or Invid? Like, one do you really respond to?
Which one is the worst? Like, the most fearsome kind of thing?
I guess you could take this question either way, actually.
I was going to say the Robotech Masters are the most fearsome because they're so smart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, they're like, they're what spawned everything for the most part, in my eye.
No, I agree, but, you know, by the time they show up, they're not at the height of their power, which is how we were able to deal with them. But I thought the Invid were probably the most dangerous of all the villains because we just, even the final battle, the humans barely survive.
Yeah.
It's real close. It's down to the wire. And it's all, you know.
Yeah, and as much as the Zentradi in some ways seem ridiculous in the way they're defeated, can be kind of silly, it's still this kind of, it's a really fun story.
It was like 4 million ships that showed up from them in the final battle. It's like, it was a giant overwhelming force that...
But what I will say in their defense, and what I really struck me as a kid, especially in the early episodes, the way they reveal that they're so huge and they're so, like, scary and, like, we don't know anything about them. So, like, the characters in the show learning about them as you're learning about them. It's not like they have a lot of information about the Zentradi that's, like, just given to you up front.
But that's also kind of how we were able to defeat them, is because they didn't know anything about us.
Yeah.
They showed up expecting it to be, like, you know... somebody fighting in battles they were used to, other, like, you know, Robotech Masters kind of, you know, thoughts on combat or whatever. And we, like, totally surprised them because they didn't know what they were dealing with. And then we, of course, the whole Lin-Man May kissing culture shock thing that definitely, you know, we joke about it, but it's a major part of the storyline.
Yeah. And I think that they're just, it seems like such a cliche trope in some ways now. But
this was 30 years ago.
But 30 years ago.
At that time.
It was something I hadn't experienced yet, even though I'm sure it existed elsewhere. But that was my first exposure to that type of storyline, and it really stuck with me, for sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of many examples at that time in American culture like that, and I can't think of any, really.
I would guess that there are, like, probably some great science fiction authors who've done something of that, to that end, but as an 11-year-old kid, I haven't read those books yet, and probably still haven't.
Question I want to pose is there an American equivalent to Robotech? Like, it sounds a little bit like G.I. Joe in space, like a big war story.
Not entirely. I mean,
a cartoon
different...
equivalent, you mean?
I
actually think that Battlestar thing is maybe the best.
The closest one for me.
Battlestar actually probably draws from Robotech a little bit.
The new one for sure. I mean, because it's that whole... They even brought... Like, they attached the aircraft carrier to the side of the SDF-1, just kind of like how, you know, Battlestar Galactica did with all the other ships, and it brought with it that kind of idea. It's like, it's a hodgepodge. It has a city inside of it that it took as well before when it time warped, you know. Mm-hmm. All the same ideas. I
gosh, I'm trying to
start
think.
Being this like arc kind of idea.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like in terms of like storytelling, maybe like for a cartoon series, maybe like Avatar.
Okay.
In the sense that not that it's a similar story at all, but it's very much like.
Because of what it tries to encompass?
It's and it's like got a clear end in sight. Right. You know, it's not like. And it's focused on characters a lot, maybe over action.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But man, that's a big jump though.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the idea that it wasn't a serial cartoon.
Yeah.
Like our Humans and our Thunder. Yeah. Like you couldn't just watch an episode and walk away. Like,
exactly.
Everyone connected to everything, and they were definitely going to.
And if you missed an episode, you were like,
totally.
Damn it. What did I miss?
Well, like you mentioned, like your TV station as a kid stopped carrying it. I remember several times as a kid, damn TV stations would stop playing them in order. You'd watch like a full week of in order. You'd come back the next week. Totally. I was like finally watching Southern Cross. And it's like, watch. The next week, it's the first episode of, you know, Macross or New Generation. Like, damn it! I was like, it took forever for me to see the entirety of Southern Cross. It wasn't actually until I bought the videos, because I think it was, 25 episodes for that segment. I'd only seen maybe half of them previously, because that was the one they seemed to cut up the most on the TV stations.
That's so
it's
weird.
It's very true, yeah. Because it was at least, I think, fan
very possibly. And whoever was programming the TV station wasn't paying attention. I just pop one in. They're the same.
or they were paying attention. Like, why did they stop watching the show? Go back to the beginning when they're watching it a lot.
Yeah. Great ratings for that one.
Yeah.
Two questions. Was this a show as a kid that a lot of your friends also watched? Or is it just something that you watched? And is this your favorite childhood cartoon from the 80s?
I had no friends. My friends were my cartoons.
I mean, I can go first since I didn't really watch Robotech. Like, I mean, I watched He-Man, Thundercats, Voltron. I watched the whole thing. I would say Thundercats is probably my favorite 80s cartoon. I was a huge Ninja Turtles fan, but Thundercats just edges it out just a little bit for me. And then in the 90s was all Dragon Ball Z. Most of my friends did watch Thundercats while I was watching it, so I had that community to talk with and whatnot. What were all of your experiences?
Well, mine's pretty quick. I mean, it wasn't Robotech. My favorite series as a kid from the 80s was G.I. Joe, hands down. Still waiting on the podcast, by the way.
Well, yeah.
All right. Yes. Moving on. So Robotech, for me, it was definitely like, that was my group of friends things. Like I said, we had the role-playing game, we had our Jester Squadron, so then we would sit down and watch an episode together, and then we'd go play, you know, a game or two. So it was very much a part of our community that we had formed, like me and my group of friends there. So there you go.
And I'm kind of the same way. G.I. Joe was my thing when I was a kid.
G.I. Joe?
Like, you know, the shared experiences. And then with Transformers, a close second, and the shared experiences with friends. And again, that fed into the toys were available. You know, you play with your friends.
I haven't even talked about that yet.
I got into the, Robotech more felt like a solo thing for a long time because you'd see it on TV, but the toys were very limited. You could find some Veritech fighters, and you could find like an SDF-1 thing here and there, but not as prolific as, you know, Transformers and G.I. Joe. So it was like, you know, it wasn't as much of a shared experience. It wasn't really until like 1990 or so, when I was in Detroit and I was like, made some new friends, found out one of my friends, Jason, was huge into Robotech, and he actually got me into like the books and the comics. Mm-hmm. And he's the one that had this, you know, video of the Sentinels pilot that was failed, that didn't get picked up. So I was able to relive it. That's when we started playing like the role-playing game and stuff there. So it kind of re-sparked this thing that like I thought was just this one-time thing when I was like a kid, you know, 5 years earlier or something I'd seen on TV.
Hmm. I definitely think Transformers was my number one. There was something about Optimus Prime that like struck a chord with me.
Sure.
And
should,
I was just
should.
Like,
something
really?
About Starscream.
Oh, cool.
Min-May is the Starscream.
Yes, in many ways.
Yeah,
yes,
really
good.
Is.
I kind of
voice.
Even
the voice, too.
I got the same voice, yeah.
So I don't think this was my number one.
Okay.
But I think it's my number two. Definitely over anything else. I guess I just have a robot thing.
Really? That's kind of gross.
Sorry. but I think... And I think I very much experienced it alone. All my friends had Transformers. We all had G.I. Joe. And, like, that was all it was a community thing. This felt like I watched this. I don't even remember ever talking to anyone about it as a kid, really. Maybe I was like, you gotta watch this show, and people didn't or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it felt very much isolated. And it didn't bother me, really, because it also felt like... in some ways, watching Robotech is more like watching Cheers than watching Transformers. Yeah. You know? Well,
we're always glad you came.
Yeah. Right? Exactly. Because it is such a character.
That's not another robot sex joke, by the way. Just saying.
No, you know? And you know, we've touched on it several times. It's really the characters that keep you going.
Yeah.
You know, you were asking about characters earlier. I realized even Captain Glovel is one of my favorites.
He's
so
great.
He's this old Russian captain of the STF-1.
With the pipe and everything.
Exactly.
And the mustache.
And trying to hold
it
together and, you know, trying to make these command decisions and, you know, face of, you know, overwhelming odds.
I recently rewatched parts of Voltron, and it is, I don't think that show holds up very well. Mm-hmm. It's, a lot of the animation is just, like, not very well put together. There's a lot of just, like, weird errors or just, like, drawing errors. You see Voltron form, like, half a million times. It's, like, 10 minutes of each episode.
It got edited a lot, though, too.
It did. But, like, the characters of Keith and Pidge and da-da-da, they just, they're not as interesting. Does Robotech hold up today?
Overall, yes, yeah. I would say.
Why is there a hesitancy or something that
you're going to run into similar animation things? Okay. Where this is animation from 30 years ago, it's obvious you're going to see throughout the series where they're reusing footage constantly, and that's cost saving. It happened. However, the storyline I think is really what propels it. Yes, you're going to get annoyed with some of the sappy stuff, some of the Lin-Manuel May stuff, some of the other things, but it all feeds into where the overall story's going.
I think if you gave this series to somebody who never watched anything in the 80s, like a kid now, they'd be like, eh, it's okay. Yeah. There are better things on. If you give it to anyone, you know, roughly our age, and maybe if you've even, like, caught an episode of G.I. Joe or Transformers recently, and then watched this, you realize that it is definitely a step above. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It definitely holds up better than, like, Transformers and G.I. Joe, the old Transformers.
The stories themselves. The dubbing is not great.
No, it's not.
How is the voice acting?
For the most part,
it's okay.
Yeah, sometimes it's fine. Other times it's like, you know, the character's moving its mouth for 4 seconds before any audio comes out.
Right.
Yeah.
Plus, it's like a lot of times the dialogue on the command deck of the ship of the girls is
silly.
It's so bubbly and cute.
Yes.
The
female characters, with the exception of, like, Claudia and Lisa Hayes, are written by men with no understanding of what women are really like.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there are definitely flaws between animation. There are some gaps in story where they are trying to bridge three totally different, you know, ideas. But overall, I think it does hold up. I think the storyline, it does, you know, hold together. And I'm still hoping they continue to find money and to do more stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that those, the dubbing problems also is a result of, like, these were shows that were getting produced by this guy, Carl Masick, that I mentioned before, by a company
who's
called...
Who's now passed away, by the way.
Oh, he did pass away?
He passed away
a few years
back, yeah.
2011, I think?
Around
that. Harmony Gold was the name of the company, and I think they had no money. So I think a lot of those female actors were the same voices, doing different voices. So they're definitely, like, they're definitely cutting edges, especially in the dubbing aspect of it. They were trying to, like, crank it out.
Yeah.
So
just to jump back to the voice talent, any actors or big name actors or people who went on to do other things that, like, Frank Welker or anyone that
I think they were based in Texas and mostly using local talent. I could be remembering that.
Some of the same voices from, like, the anime of the time, like Lupin, was some of the same voices there. So there's a lot of overlap there. But
yeah.
I remember glancing the other day, but I don't remember anything really standing out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anything that's come along that has out Robotech, like Attack on Titan or some new modern anime that does it, but maybe just a little bit better with some hindsight?
Well, I mean, certain things like, I mean, getting away from anime, I mean, the Battlestar Galactica relaunch was its own idea, you know, not a version of this, but that epic storytelling of, you know... Fights in space.
And after the first episode or two, is it the very first episode where they warp away?
Third.
So once they warp away, they're out by, like, Jupiter and STF-1, and it's trying to get back to Earth without the Zentradi finding them and killing them. Mm-hmm. That's Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Yeah. Well, and even once they get to Earth, Earth won't let them land because it's like, well, the Zentradi are focused on you. Why would we want to let you land on Earth?
Get out of here.
You're just trouble. Leave.
No, I don't know that anything is out Robotech to Robotech, though. I'm always, I feel like every 3 years there's a rumor of a live action movie.
Yeah.
Which I feel like...
It never got off the ground.
Yeah, could be a total nightmare or awesome.
as much as I want to see that, I'm afraid to see that.
Yeah, exactly. I feel exactly the same way.
Because I think, you know, this thing with combining these three different movie anime things and, you know, ideas, for all of its flaws, it's really what creates some of the beauty of it. And, you know, this giant storyline that encompasses 40-some-odd years. And, yeah, I mean, just nothing's really... And this thing came about just because they needed 85 or 65 episodes to, like, get it on TV.
Right.
And it's like, it was just almost of necessity this thing was created. And
even going back further than that, it's maybe the only thing that's out Robotech did is maybe Gundam.
Oh, yeah, Gundam.
But originally, Macross was conceived in Japan before it ever was close to becoming Robotech as a spoof of Gundam. It wasn't originally supposed to be a serious series. It was supposed to be like this, we're making fun of this other series kind of thing.
Macross was?
Yeah, and then they got into like design, and they started designing the Veritex, and they started plotting it out a little bit, and they were like, no, wait, this is actually awesome. Like, let's just make this. Yeah. But originally, yeah, like the idea, because I guess somebody thought like the idea of transforming, the whole transforming robot from like weird jet fighter thing was stupid. Like, so they were, like, kind of, like, goofing on that a little bit.
But then, you know, you're getting into, like, Transformers era and everything. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know Gundam came first. I thought it came after.
I'm pretty sure it was Gundam. Okay. I might double-check that, but...
Wait, Gundam came after Robotech?
Right. I think in Japan, Gundam came first.
It did.
Yeah.
It did. There were so many versions of Gundam.
Yeah,
first one did come before Robotech.
Yeah,
or Macross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The American show that this is reminding me of is Exo Squad. As far as, like, yeah.
That's funny you say that, actually.
Yes, which kind of has a similar thing of, like, Earth being invaded. There's no fighters. Like, everybody has these Exo Squads, these suits that they wear.
Badass show, by the way.
It was a really good show. It only ran for 2 seasons.
Yeah. In the 90s, didn't they release some of the Robotech toys as Exo Squad toys?
What I was talking about. In the 90s, they re-released a lot of the toys... like the Veritex, the Battle Pods and stuff, with the Exo Squad name, because it's still Matchbox. And they still had the rights, and they wanted to make more toys, so they just kind of put them in there.
Yeah.
But they made them so like you could fit the figures, like the Exo Squad guys, in the ships and stuff. Like
weird.
The Zentradi Battle Pod. So it was kind of weird. Like, it wasn't actually said it was a Robotech thing. Mm. It was kind of weird. But
I totally forgot about Exo Squad, but as soon as you said that, I went, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I remember seeing those and being like, do I need a battle pod?
I need to get that, right?
They're really cool toys, actually.
Yeah.
Some really sweet. I remember
those. All right, well, I'm opening the floor at this time. We've talked about the role-playing game a little bit and some of the toys. Is there anything you guys want to talk about, like favorite episodes or favorite technology, something we haven't hit on?
I'm a big fan of the Super Veritech.
Super Veritech.
Do you remember, what was it, Jetfire? Was that the Transformers?
This is just what I was going to bring up.
Same toy. The Super Veritech was a normal Veritech with like the extra booster pods on top and extra armor, carried a ton more missiles, was awesome. Rick flew it at the end of the Cross War, and it was my preferred fighter every time I played the role-playing game.
They were really cool, and it's interesting you bring up Jetfire, who was a Transformers toy, was the Veritech fighter. And part of the reason I think the Matchbox toys suffered so much was they had sold the mold, the original Japanese mold, of the toy, because you could get all of these, essentially what looked like Jetfire with all the different heads and all the different colors that were supposed to be in Macross. Mm-hmm. In Japan, you could buy those. And they transformed fully, and they were really cool. They're partly die-cast, partly plastic.
Yeah.
And then they'd sold them to Hasbro... And then Matchbox couldn't use that mold,
right,
even though that was the main thing on their show. So they made like a Veritech fighter. It was like a big, like goofy looking one that super didn't transform,
quote unquote.
Yeah, and like American. So they had. I think there were licensing issues that also
hurt Matchbox toys. Right, how they got around that is in America when they released Robotech toys, they could only do just the jet Veritech.
Yeah,
they couldn't transform at all.
Oh.
And it would have, you could put a guy in there and that was it. But they had the SDF-1, they had, you know, Zentradi Battle, Captain Pods. And
but imagine if Matchbox had had those transformable toys.
Oh, man. It would've,
that would have been a huge difference in the way that that show was received. Yep. I think more kids would have been into it. And it might have, Sentinels might have taken off.
I mean, kids watch shows because of toys. It's the bottom line.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
It really is. I mean, they see a show, they like the show, they buy the toy, they keep watching the show.
Especially in the 80s.
Especially in the 80s.
Well, I remember going out and being like, I don't want this shitty Veritech that doesn't transform.
Exactly.
I already got Jetfire. He's red and black, and he should be yellow and black, but I'll... fuck it, I'll play with it.
Oh, man. Oh, you know what? That's right. They did release a hover tank... with the Exo Squad series.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, so there is a Hover Tank toy out there, but again, it's not very good.
It's just junky.
It's junky.
I would like to throw this out there. Favorite episode? Like, is there an episode that really stuck with you?
I don't want to say.
Yeah, because some of them were spoilers.
Spoilering. All right. Yeah.
I mean, I would say, I don't remember the name of the episode, but we already alluded to this earlier. There are two very specific deaths. Both of those are like, ugh.
Yeah.
Like they were just a sucker punch. I think more so the second one. The first one you kind of maybe saw coming.
Mm-hmm.
The second one,
Obi-Wan in a way.
Yeah, the second
it's
one,
not trying to get too much away.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's that kind of idea.
Oh.
Those were tough to get through. Yeah, I'm trying to remember what else. Actually, I would say the first episode of Invitivation of New Generation.
Yeah. Oh, right.
Because
where Scott gets there. And
it's really exciting and fun, and I was like, all new shit, great.
Yeah.
Like the new Veritechs were so cool, and the Cyclone armor was so cool, and it was just like, after Southern Cross being kind of meh, you know, it like felt like, yeah, it's back. They got it back.
Yeah.
How do they handle their character deaths? Because the one show I remember that was supposed to have a character death, they edited out of Voltron. And, I mean, obviously the death of Optimus Prime was
that was a movie.
That was a movie.
Or in the beginning of the movie when everyone died.
True. Yeah. Transformers the movie is an interesting discussion in and of itself.
Yeah.
For Robotech, like, you're... standard, you know, just other pilots dying, there wasn't much attention, it's combat, explosions left and right.
Yeah.
Main characters or auxiliary characters, they would do it like the main characters, it was sad, it's like, you know, you'd have the people who cared for them crying, and they would mess with them for a while, and, you know,
they tried
to handle it as maturely as possible.
They would show Rick being affected, they would show what happened to the main characters, like them being affected by the loss.
Several times Rick was questioning, why am I doing this, what am I out there, I'm losing people left and right.
There's a great point we haven't brought up at all. That's this war drama, especially Macross, that is very like anti-war in its sentiment.
There is, Kyle Min Mei. Lin Kyle.
Min Mei's cousin.
Who's a pacifist and gets aggressive about it.
Yeah, yeah. He's a kung fu fighting pacifist.
Yeah. who in the middle of the war thinks the RDF should lay down its arms and try to make peace. Which we eventually do, but at the same time, he's like, why should we fight? They're attacking us. Why should we fight back? Like, because we're going to be destroyed otherwise?
Yeah.
Because they're going to hurt
us. But it's interesting that they brought up those questions, you know? Like, that was another aspect of it that I was like, oh, cool. Because, like, G.I. Joe never does that, you know? Like,
they have
Cobra-thon. That show is all about guys in a writer room being like, how do I write an episode about a bunch of army fighters who can't kill each other?
Because like Robotech, I mean, like, last episode of the Macross, you know, Lisa and Rick are talking about, you know, to Min Mei, it's like, they don't want war, they're in this to try to stop the war. They don't want the people to die, you know, too many people have died already, but the war continues, and if they don't do something, it's just going to continue.
Yeah, it's very even-handed, because it's not... it's saying, like, we fought this war for a reason, like Lynn Kyle is not presented as the most rational person. Yeah. It's not like his point of view is the correct one.
He ends up being a jerk in general.
He ends up being a jerk.
The anti-war stuff is secondary.
Yeah, and it's more about like, yeah, we are fighting to protect ourselves, but ultimately, like, we have to like find a peace, a lasting peace. Yep.
And just cool. For a time, we do. I mean, and that's, you know, kind of the war. You know, yes, there's a lot of violence, but you know, it's not because we destroyed every Zentradi. We made peace with quite a few of them.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. I also own. I have one. I bought an imported DVD of Macross. Do You Remember Love? Which is the Macross saga, 45 episode saga, condensed into like an hour and 45 minute movie.
Yeah,
does that work?
It is oversimplified in some ways.
It's very simplified. It is very simplified, but it works pretty well.
Yeah, you hit the main topics.
You hit the main stuff. The Lisa Rick Minmay thing is definitely there. There's definitely less Max, which is disappointing to me. The designs are a little bit different. The Vertek fighters are the same for the most part. They add a cannon onto one of the super packs. And otherwise, they're the same. But, like, the character designs are a little different. Their costumes are... Outfits are different. Mm-hmm. The animation overall is just generally better. Or more consistent, I should say.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. It's kind of a fun watch to get through it fast. And... I guess in the continuity now, though, it is considered, in the Macross continuity, I don't think it has anything to do with Robotech necessarily. Mm-hmm. In the Macross continuity, the TV series is the actual continuity, and Do You Remember Love, in the Macross universe, is a movie that's a historical movie about that time. Like us watching Lincoln.
Right.
That's what that is.
That's is, what it is.
Isn't that crazy?
It's so
that's
weird.
Good. That's good.
you were asking about favorite episodes. There was two that popped to mind. One was the, I think it was the Blitzkrieg episode where they're in the Rings of Saturn fighting the Zentradi. My favorite part about that is the first time they use the Daedalus attack. It's a special...
Oh, yeah.
Daedalus was one of the ships that they had attached to the SDF-1. It was in battleoid mode, and they use it for an attack. That comes up a few other times. It was the first one. It was kind of fun. Then the other one, it wasn't... It's not the last episode of Macross, but it's the kind of penultimate battle with the Zentradi. And was it Dolza? Was that the main Zentradi guy?
Dolza.
Yeah, and this giant space battle, and it was just kind of between the SDF-1 and against like all these Zentradi, and it's crazy. It's like so much combat going on. Just
I don't have a favorite episode, but just my favorite moment that as a kid was seeing the SDF-1
It's in Macross.
Seeing the SDF-1 transform for the first time. Holy bejesus!
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, like you already knew that the ships the Vertex transform, but then seeing their whole world basically transform into a robot as well. It's an image. It's a little, I don't know what's the word I'm looking for. It's kind of almost a metaphor for the war that they're fighting in a way, and the fact that I don't know. I'm trying to go deep, and I'm not going to go there.
That is a really cool moment. And they actually in that movie that I was just talking about, the Do You Remember Love movie. That sequence is particular. I think is even better than in the series because, like, you see much more. The town inside in the first transformation gets fucked up.
Yep.
Because it's not meant to be.
It's not intended to be there. And the ship isn't even really meant to transform.
Yeah, they have to do it out of necessity because basically the power link for the main cannon got destroyed, and this is the way to piece it together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's kind of gruesome in the movie a little bit in a way that's like sad, but like has those Robotech Macross moments that you're like, oh god, people are really dying.
Yep.
Oh,
like this isn't just a fun thing. Yeah. Like they got to do it, and it's like people like scrambling to get to someplace safe, and then eventually, like in the series, they get to the point where like they know to go to a shelter, and like things still get messed up, but they can kind of get back to normal.
Yeah.
I think I just found the metaphor I was looking for, and I'll be quick. The fact that their home, their ark, their world that they're surviving on, their last remnants of the earth or whatever, that city, has to transform into a war being to get themselves out of this scrape that they're in. You know, they have to accept the fact that they are in a battle, that they are a fortress, that they are, you know, part of this war.
Yeah.
To really survive.
How big is the SDF-1 compared to other science fiction? Is it bigger than the Enterprise?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, hell yeah.
Bigger than the Super Star Destroyer?
I don't have a sense of scale between the two, but it's big enough that it fits. There's a section of this ship somewhere where there is literally a city inside of it.
All right,
a small city. So it is huge.
And if you think about it, there's two aircraft carriers attached to the side.
It's four arms or two aircraft carriers.
So that's like, what, a third of it? Aircraft carriers? Yeah. So like three aircraft carriers long, maybe?
Okay.
In size? Whatever that is. I don't even know.
Do you remember, Love, is that dubbed or is it only in Japanese?
I think it's only got subtitles, so it's never actually been released here.
Okay.
Because I got it in Region 4. Free DVD.
Okay.
Which is totally legal.
Wink.
Yeah, I wasn't sure because I know, obviously Macross Plus is dubbed. Dubbed by Bryan Cranston, by the way, from like 20 years ago.
No, I didn't know that.
It's not on the back. Oh, it's not on the back.
Not credited.
Wait, who does he play?
He plays the lead, Asamu. He's one of the
really?
Two main pilots.
I
would
not even notice that at the time either.
It was interesting. I just stumbled upon that today, which
that's
and
funny.
Like watching it again, I'm like, that is Bryan Cranston. That's crazy.
Huh.
It was back when he was doing like Power Rangers and all that, like when he was doing a lot of just like voiceover work to get by.
Yeah.
So it's just funny that he's in there. Love Macross Plus, by the way. Really love it.
It's cool, but it has nothing to do with like
absolutely
the ships
nothing.
Or anything.
No. It's just a cool story in that
it's
universe.
It's like Top Gun with Veritex.
Yeah, very much. That's what it is.
I think I like the designs of the ships a little less well in Macross Plus. Also, I mean they're cool, but I don't know. I like the classic Veritex a lot.
Yeah, they're sleek, man.
Yeah.
Well, those are all the questions I had. Is there anything else you guys want to chat about that we need to?
Well, I mean, you're the outcast. Do you have any questions for us?
No, I'm going to watch it. Oh, I do have a question. The role-playing game.
Mm-hmm.
How is it? Is it good? Is it cumbersome?
The official role-playing game.
It's based on the Palladium Rift thing, which is always a little off.
Yeah. I played that the most. Like I said, that was my first role-playing game ever, even before D&D.
Yeah. So it's the same thing GURPS was based on.
Yeah,
exactly. General Universal Role-Playing System.
Yeah.
But as you're saying, like the Rift system,
so
complicated, way overcomplicated. I mean, it's like, it was at the same time of like second edition D&D, so like a bunch of D20s. You had stats for everything.
Yeah.
You had to roll all the time. Yeah. It was really kind of disjointed in that sense.
Yeah, it really, really held up role to the flow of playing.
But what I did like about it was because it was in the same world as Rifts, and Rifts has that idea where
crossover.
Exactly, you can cross over, and we did that a lot. Like, we would actually have like
some glitter boys.
Glitter boys, come in and fight our Veritex, and we'd jump through like a rift and we'll go fight like Ninja Turtles, because that was another one that Rifts had, the Ninja Turtle role-playing game.
Yeah. Well, in the role-playing game, like, you know, we would cross the genres. Like, we would be off like the Sentinel thing fighting the Invid, but I would still be flying like a Super Veritech, which was like this outdated thing, but at the same time, it was like compared to the, you know, because the protoculture was more reduced, it was like, my thing was like super powered. It was a giant target, but it was like, I had a lot more firepower than some of the newer mechs.
Yeah. So I liked the game. I thought it was fun for the time, but looking back on it, there's so much better, so many better systems now.
Yeah.
Do you know if they've updated that game?
I don't think they have licensing currently, because I think, you know, Harmony Gold or whoever. You know, maybe they'll license it. And a few years ago, they put out a video game that was pretty good.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Played it.
And the nice, I think I liked about it was 64, right? It was,
N64.
No, it was Xbox and PS2.
Oh, okay.
I think I played it on GameCube.
That might have been next.
I know I played it on at least the Xbox or something. But the nice thing about that was the animation. It was actually animation from, like, the series. Not like some updated, you know, super slick. So it was kind of neat because you're playing like this very stylized kind of fighter movie or fighter game.
And you're also following the story of the first
season
too, right?
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So you're like as Rick and stuff like that.
Yep.
Like in the first scene of the show.
Fighting like Chiron and stuff. And
so it's cool.
Cool. Battle pods popping up left and right.
I mean, no, you guys have done it. I'll watch the show. I've always Good. It's kind of my big one yeah. of my big nerd gaps. I actually really want to play the game now, just because that was really my gateway into it. Yeah. And, like, my first role-playing experience. Just staying up, like, late Friday nights, fighting Invid and whatnot.
I'm going to go home and find my character sheet, man. He's right. somewhere, I'm sure.
yeah, so, let's do final thoughts real quick. Steven, we'll start with you. Any final thoughts on Robotech that you want to say to me or the listeners?
You know, it's just cheesy, but it's just a thank you. I guess that it was there for me at the time because it did so much. I it's really sappy and cheesy, but seriously, like, it was my gateway to anime, which I really appreciate and I love as a genre, and it's also my gateway to role playing, which again I really appreciate and love as an entity. You know, for me, it started a lot of things that I really enjoy in my life, and I'm glad I have them.
There was a bit of a anime scare for a while.
Yeah,
like in the. I'd say it was more in the 90s. I don't really remember it in the 80s. But do any of you remember that being aimed at Robotech? Like, oh, this is something weird from Japan. You can't watch it. You know, like any...
They suffered because they didn't have any money at the time. Like, there was things that were going to happen, and they just all fell away because of the crash.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in the 90s there was a fear based on... more salacious anime getting into America. Is it really representative of real anime?
But this was already here.
Yeah, this had been here for a while. Speed Racer is anime, and it was here in the 60s, you know?
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
Battle of the Planets was in the 70s, this was in the 80s. What was that other big series in the 70s that they brought over? Oh gosh, I can't think of it now. The Battleship Yamato was another one that was like sort of popular, but like had already been dubbed. So it was a long-standing tradition. It was just in the 90s it got weird.
And Lupin was in the 70s too, but it didn't come over until later, right?
I think so.
That's right.
I think so.
All right. Pat, final thoughts for Robotech.
We still don't know where the SDF-3 is.
..
Someday. And we never will.
Well, I'll say in my
so long as they can't get funding
found
for
it,
any more stories. Yeah.
Yeah.
We know where it is in the novelizations, but apparently that's no longer canon, so who knows.
Having read the books, do you know if they're still out there? Are they good? Or, like, how would you... they're comic books, right?
They're both. There's novelizations of the series. Most of them... are basically just novelization of the you know what you've already seen or you will soon see. So there's not much. They fill in some gaps in the information, flesh out some things, but really it was they did an offshoot of this whole Sentinels SDF-3 going off this other universe. So you find out what happens there, and how the entire thing tied up at that point. But again, this was like 1991 or something when these were out.
Yeah.
So from what I saw on the internet, that's no longer considered canon. So. The producers may be doing something different at some point.
But they were, like, pretty... I read a couple of the earlier ones. I never got through them all. But they were all written by a fellow named Jack McKinney.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some thought into, like... It wasn't just, like, this tie-in, quick throwaway thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they really did think
it
through.
He really did flesh it out.
Yeah.
So there's things like... You know, what brought Zor to Earth, you know, how the Zentradi developed, you know, what the Robotech Masters' true, you know, motivations were. You get more into that that's actually kind of interesting, because some of it, it's touched on in the show, but it gets glazed over in many areas.
How do you like to consume your Robotech story? Do you think it served better as a show, or do the books...
I think it served better as a show, and I think things like the books and comics are nice... auxiliary things. I was mentioned earlier, yeah, the comic books, the one that was I really enjoyed, it was called Malcontent Uprising. It takes place after it was totally standalone. It takes place after Macross, where there's still some Zentradi in like the South America, Argentina kind of area that are basically having this uprising, and people, you know, from leftovers from the Macross, like Max Sterling's down there trying to put down this insurgency. And some of the colonels and stuff that will become generals in Southern Cross are involved in it.
Hmm.
And it's kind of interesting that, you know, again, it's not canon per se, but it's interesting because it kind of fleshes out the universe. It gives it more depth.
Do you remember who the publishers were?
It was DC, yeah.
Oh, really?
They still have the rights.
And it was all black and white. It wasn't colored. Only the covers would be colored. All the pages were black and white.
Okay.
Cool. And they actually did another comic series not too long ago, a couple of years ago. And I think it's still going. It may have stopped. But they had like a couple of little arcs of Robotech series.
Okay.
That were in color through DC. I have a bunch of them, but and they kind of delve into different, again, more different, just little gaps here and there in the series. Like Max is doing something here, and Rick and Min Mae are doing something over here, that kind of thing. But no huge story arcs, really.
Yeah.
Matt, any final words about Robotech?
I don't know, sort of similar to what Steven said. I just appreciate the fact that it was one of the first things that I felt like wasn't talking down to me as a kid.
Good.
And I really appreciated that. And it's something I've always sort of remembered. So I try not to talk down to kids.
That's good. Yeah, yeah.
And B, it's just like, in a bigger sense, as an artist and someone who works in theater and writes, I always try to think like, And in my job, also, I write custom educational software. I'm always trying to not talk down to my audience. Mm-hmm. And it's a very easy trap, or it's a slippery slope sometimes. Because some people are like, well, what if they don't understand this, or they don't get that? And it's very easy to, like, dumb things down for people. And a lot of times when you don't dumb things down for people, people step up and appreciate it. So that's kind of that's one of the first experiences I had, like being aware of that. So I always take that away from it.
That's a great point.
Yeah, that is a good point to go out on. With all of that said, we have to bring our Robotech discussion to a close. At this time, if anybody has anything that they're working on or wish to pimp out, now is the time.
Again, we are remounting McSith for another time this year. It's going to be traveling around. This is the show that's happening in Chicago here through Edge Theater. You can go to edgeoforion.com and find out more information on it. It's basically Macbeth set in the Star Wars universe. So there's lightsabers and Sith and Jedi, and it's pretty bad and pretty fun. And I play Mondoff in it. And we're going to be taking it to Chi-Fi as well as C2E2 and some other conventions. So check it out. Be good times.
Cool. Nice.
Nothing for me at the moment, although I'm sure I'll find a way to change it.
Cool.
You can always listen to the improvised Star Trek podcast, upon which I play Captain Julius Valentine Baxter. We also currently have a live show that ends March 1st, Sunday nights at 8:30 p.m. at IO Theater here in Chicago. I also occasionally still play with World News Tonight and the Improvised Shakespeare Company, also at IO. And soon, keep your eyes peeled, rather your iTunes search bar peeled, for Hello from the Magic Tavern, which is a new podcast in which I play a wizard named Usador, and my friend Arnie plays himself doing a podcast from a magical world. That should be ridiculous and lots of fun. So, Hello from the Magic Tavern will be coming soon.
Nice. I have nothing currently in the works. I just came out of a long run of shows and whatnot, so nothing specifically to pimp out at this time. You can always find the Nerd Opcast podcast here. We have many new topics coming out this year, which should be very exciting. I will be guest spotting on Blastro Podcast in the near future, so please check that out in the coming months. And of course, if you're in the Chicago area, you can find me and some of the people in this room at the Public House Theater nearby by Liver, or whatever shows that are going on at that place at this time. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming out today and discussing.
Well, we're all so pleased to be here.
You're pleased to be here? It was a pleasure.
I am pleased to be here.
Is that for a callback, huh?
your last episode, so now.
I kid.
No, I'm not kidding. It's been really fun. I can't wait to watch this show, so. Fill this nerd gap, you know?
There you go.
I've been your host, Chris Bashan, and joining me to talk about Robotech have been
Steven Scalabrino,
Patrick Sweetman,
Matt Young.
Thank you, and have a good night. And with